Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Len Testa, and this is our show for the week of April 8th, 2019. On the show today, we look at a bunch of Disney news announcements, and Jim digs deeper into the Universal Ride Survey we talked about a couple of weeks ago. That one got a lot of listener interest, so we're going to expand on it on today's show. But first, let's bring in the man who reminds us that family traditions are nothing more than peer pressure from dead people, one Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Wow, we're starting really upbeat with this show. Okay.
I was looking at these show notes that we wrote up beforehand, and I'm like, I'm going to be Mr. Cranky Pants today, and I don't know why, because I feel great.
All right, well, let's get right into offending the people then, okay? Just you know, jump right in here.
But, all right, before we do that, Jim, let's do a quick shout-out to subscribers over at disneydish.bandcamp.com. Thanks to new subscribers Wesley J. Hey, Wesley. DVC Family and Figment 34786. And longtime subscribers Donna I, Swan Dolphin, and Sean F. Fun fact, Jim, at one time or another, all of these folks have played Divine at Disney's Animal Kingdom. In fact, if you go up to Divine and whisper, Donna, if that's you, give me a sign, and then listen really, really hard, you'll hear the leaves rustling in the background. And that, Jim, is how you know. Don't look at LinkedIn. Do that.
Okay. I once was at the park and Divine was out and she was doing a wonderful job of blending in, such a wonderful job that somebody actually backed into her.
Ooh, on stilts.
Yeah,
ooh.
And it was just one of these moments where suddenly, you know, you went from, oh, look at the slow-moving bush to look at the frantic moss-covered giraffe trying to stay up. It was...
it's some drunk leaves over there.
Not pretty.
All right, Jim, let's jump into the news. Don't forget, folks, the Disney Dish News is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Disney Dish Podcast. For a worry-free travel experience every time, book online at storybookdestinations.com. Jim, let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. How often do you stay awake at night wondering to yourself just how early Disney could possibly begin celebrating Halloween?
When you run out of the fun-sized Milky Ways, you know, this is actually a concern, Len.
April is around the time when the Halloween candy runs
there
out in
New
Hampshire, is that what you're saying?
There we go.
All right, Jim, well, apparently you're not alone in this concern. This week, Disney announced a new Magic Kingdom hard ticket event called Disney Villains After Hours, starting June 6th and running for 10 nights through August 8th, 2019. That's right, Jim. Halloween starts during the last 2 weeks of spring now.
The previous attempts for a villain event were over at Disney's Hollywood Studio, which obviously, with Galaxy's Edge looming, not going to happen.
They've got other things to worry about in June, July, and August, right?
Yeah. Did you read some of the description of some of the stuff they're doing? Like, for example, the Maleficent Dragon Float is going to wander through the park?
I'm sure it's going to be on the parade route, right? We're not going to see it in Tomorrowland.
Well, you know, that's a thing. Likewise, the villain show that they're going to be doing in front of the castle, which, by the way, no villains available afterwards to do meet and greets.
So we've seen some of the things before. There's they say character additions at Pirates of the Caribbean and Space Mountain. Mm-hmm. We saw that at Pirates of the Caribbean last year. Mm-hmm. Special food and beverage offerings, which we've sort of seen kicked around before. Obviously, all kinds of merchandise. There's also a new stage show from Hercules. Mm-hmm. Interesting choice, with appearances by Jafar the Queen and Maleficent, like you said. Ticket prices, $139 plus tax, $144 day of. Annual pass holders and DVC members get a $30 discount on that.
2 years ago, we saw Club Villain launched in the Black Box Theater over at Disney Hollywood Studios. In fact, I know at some point in today's show, we're going to talk about Lightning McQueen, the show that went in there as the replacement. But it's fascinating for me to see Disney continue to kick the tires for villains events and trying to figure out how can we do this? Because as far back as, 86, when they opened the Cinderella Mystery Tour, which at Tokyo Disney, which was basically the first attraction to ever celebrate the villains. I mean, this is something that Disney's really, really wanted to do. And I know you and I have talked about on previous shows about the Bald Mountain project that was going to be built where New Fantasyland is, which was going to be an attraction that celebrated the villains. It's I guess they're just going to keep working at this till they get the idea that they get the thing that they like that makes money, that's successful. But
did I ever tell you about my idea for an April Fool's Day joke related to the Disney Cruise Line?
No.
It was so I was going to try and film a promo where the next Disney ship launched was going to be a villains themed ship. So everything, all of the activities, all of the decor, all the restaurants, all of the cast staterooms would be villain themed. So imagine you're dining and your waitstaff comes up to you and, you know, is bringing your food, but then Cruella de Vil walks by and knocks over your glass or something, you know, or like takes the bread basket. I was going to try and film a little vignette like that and make it into a Disney Cruise Line commercial and release it on April Fool's Day. But I think the more I thought about it, I'm like, why isn't this a good idea? Like, why isn't an entire, in this case, cruise ship dedicated to villains? Why is that not a good idea? I think it is. I think it's a good idea.
Well, at the very least, I mean, if they're doing a Marvel Day at Sea and a, you know, Star Wars Day at Sea, you know, wouldn't it center?
Yeah, Disney villains.
Yeah, there you go. So
yeah, you mentioned the character greetings where, you know, the kids run up to the characters and the characters can do things like stand in front of the kids so that the kids aren't in the photos or, you know, or pretend to do it, right? And there are all kind of goofy things that villains can do that that regular characters can't.
Oh, that sounds cool. Okay, all right, Cruise Line, you heard the idea. Steal it.
Exactly, please. All right, Jim, other events going on. Disney's announced the Food and Wine Festival will run even longer in 2019 to November 23rd, the weekend before Thanksgiving. Jim, you know I like food and wine. I think the food quality is good. And people seem to enjoy it. The opening, though, Jim, of Food and Wine is Thursday, August 29th this year. And because Food and Wine is so popular, Jim, it's a good thing that Disney doesn't have anything else going on August 29th, because there's also free dining to go along with that Food and Wine Festival. And don't forget, Jim, that Disney's raised ticket prices this year to try and spread crowds out evenly throughout the year. So you don't want to have too many things happening at the same time in the park that would draw people in, because that would just defeat the purpose of those higher ticket prices, right?
Right. The 29th?
I looked at that and I'm like,
oh my,
what else do I have on my calendar that day?
Jeez,
something.
That's, you know, in a galaxy far, far away, Len, but, you know.
Something. What was I? It was a Thursday. Is it Monday night football starting? No, I don't remember what it was. Anyway, I'm sure I'm forgetting something in my calendar that's happening on August 20th. But again, fortunately, it must not be a major event because Disney, again, wants to spread crowds out throughout the year. And they wouldn't do anything crazy like announcing multiple events on exactly the same day.
We need people in the park that day because it did.
Yeah. It's going to be, you'd want to, it's one of the slower times of the year. You want to bring people in because nothing else going on.
Do we know if the Skyliner is going to be up and running at that point? Because that sounds like.
Jim, if they have to move those cables by hand, I guarantee you that Skyliner is running.
Oh my!
On August 29th, if they're running Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway with flashlights and finger puppets, Jim, it will be running on August 29th. I guarantee it over at the studios.
I've seen enough Irwin Allen movies that this is how it starts, Len. It's like food line on the same day, open a giant attraction, and you know the people are just riding in the Skyliner, and it's like, and everybody gets a complimentary, you know, thing of butane.
You know what else we need here? We need a factory that produces like 1,000 cream pies a minute. And then we need a black and white film camera to see what happens there. All right.
Actually, you know, before we move on here, the other thing that does concern me here is the November 23rd close date.
The weekend before Thanksgiving. Sure. What could possibly go wrong?
The poor people who actually swap out the decorations at the park, they're going to want the entire holiday program in place at Epcot by Wednesday.
4 days later. Exactly. 4 days later. Yes.
I get it. It's popular, but you don't want to actually kill your employees, especially, you know, given what this fall is going to be like on the heels of Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, yeah. So there's a 4 day turnaround before from the end of Food and Wine to the beginning of Festival of the Holidays. Mm-hmm. I did some math. There are roughly 240 of the 365 days this year has some sort of festival going on in Epcot. That's 2 out of every 3 days. The only month without a festival date, July. And I think that's because they just haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah. the sweat through your t-shirt festival. It's like,
yeah, the asphalt festival. I'm going with something there. Yeah. Right. You can barbecue, I think. Go. Yeah. All right, Jim, other news this week. It's finally announced that the Haunted Mansion has on-ride photo pass. I'm a little surprised it's actually taken this long to do it. And you'd think that the photo would be taken at the end of the ride where you're looking at your reflection in the mirror, but it's actually at the beginning. Jim, a long time ago, you and I talked about the possibility of some really interesting on-ride photos happening at the Haunted Mansion. This is not that. What happened?
Well, do you remember the deck that we got for the first iteration of Magic Bands and PhotoPass and how they talked about, you know, for example, you were going to be able to take a ghost home?
Right, yeah. There was a lot of scene one stuff that that never actually panned out.
The whole notion now of the step away from you can't view this at the end of the attraction, but at the same time, given the number of people who pour through this building daily, it's just sort of like, that's not possible. Given that the retail component of the Haunted Mansion really is, what, 300 feet away from?
Oh, Memento Mori? Yeah.
You can look on My Disney Experience. You can, when you're back in your hotel room, or even get your phone. But, you know, the whole notion of, we don't have to sell this to you anymore. You're already going to buy it.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that Disney realized that the investment in the technology just wasn't, for a really special ride photo, just wasn't worth it when enough people would buy it to already.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, let me, since we're playing 20 questions here, let me ask you another question. Mm-hmm. When you think, Jim, of Disney's contemporary resort, what comes to mind?
Well, you know, what? A-frame, modern, sleek.
Modern architecture, right. Good answers. Mm-hmm. Monorail, chrome, concrete. Yes, right. Jim, how far down your list did you have Western barbecue? Because Disney just announced Woody's Roundup at the Contemporary Resort. It's July 4th, 5th, and 6th this year. It is a food festival with a Western-themed buffet, after which people can watch fireworks from the balcony of the Contemporary Resort.
The only thing that makes sense here are a couple of things. First of all, remember, June 19th, possibly the 21st of this year, we're getting Toy Story 4 out in theaters. In fact, just yesterday in Las Vegas, they showed the first 17 minutes of the film to exhibitors out there and evidently got a big reaction. So, yeah, okay, you're looking to cash in on this. Also, remember, we had the Pixar Play Zone open up on the fourth floor last year. The entire, it's that childcare option where you pay the $65 and your kid gets to cavort with Carl and Russell and Doug.
Yeah, and it's still, I mean, I've been by the Contemporary since it opened. It's not as obvious that that's there as you would think. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, it's about as hard to find as the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. At the Contemporary?
This is true. You could send out a search party for the bathrooms at the Contemporary. Yeah. I don't necessarily sense that it's a trial balloon. I think that it's more a case of, okay, this is a time when the resort is just swamped with people and they'll be looking for things and we can do this here and more to the point, we can capture people coming out of the Magic Kingdom during a time when, let's be honest, the 4th of July weekend, the kingdom is body to body.
Yeah, it's true. And so for families who are staying at the Contemporary or, you know, at a monorail resort who don't want to fight the crowds to see the 4th of July fireworks, yeah, decent option.
But
yeah, fair
but
enough.
Yeah, no, you're right. Expect the theme police to show up, you know, at the event and shoo everybody out. It's like, you want to go to a Western barbecue, get out of Fort Wilderness, scram, kids.
Exactly. So. I'm a little surprised at the prices, $150 for adults. $100 for kids ages 3 to 9.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot for 3 hours of activity, but fair enough. I will say this. Jim, if I could have just a word with our listeners, let me say this. Whichever of you got a survey from Disney and said the Contemporary needed a cowboy barbecue, stop doing that, okay? just stop doing that.
Okay.
All right, Jim. You mentioned earlier the new Lightning McQueen show. Mm. Over at Disney's Hollywood Studios. This fits in well with our recent Pixar film theme. This opened. It's in the Sunset Showcase all the way at the end of Sunset Boulevard. Make a left, walk through the Rock and Roller Coaster Courtyard, and then into this thing. It's roughly a 10-minute show, Jim. Holds a couple hundred people, and it's designed to entertain like 1,200 to 1,500 people an hour. I mean, Jim, this is purely a capacity play for Galaxy's Edge, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah. If you talk with Imagineers about this, they're trying to sell it as, well, you know, it's our new automotive entertainment complex. And it's like, excuse me? It's like, well what? We're next door to Rock and Roller Coaster, where you ride a limo. So, you know, in fact, that supposedly they're looking to create sort of a catty corner retail cart thing between the two places where they will sell merch for the Racing Academy and the Rock and Roller Coaster with the car stuff on it. There's a belief that this will work.
Jim, I've read last minute book reports from fourth graders that have that are better than this. What?
It's one of these things where a quick diversion here that I don't know if you saw in the past week that the Rolling Stones had to cancel.
I saw that.
Yes. Okay. Because Mick needs heart surgery.
A stent, not surgery. A stent.
Well, but here's the thing. All right, Mick is 75 years old. You know, the interesting thing, the way Imagineering works, somebody went, "How old is Steven Tyler?" And Steven Tyler is 71. There have been periodically over the past 10 to 15 years discussions about what do we do when Steven is no longer with us. Do we stick with, you know, Aerosmith as the act that we've built, you know, this thing around? Because for one little horrifying moment, they were seriously talking about retheming the attraction around the Jonas Brothers, because that was a Disney basically owned act.
Joe Bros did get back together, so yeah. Anything's possible.
Well, but this is the thing. Mick's medical issue and them having to put off the tour sort of reopened this conversation again at Disney. And it's like, we probably need to be thinking more seriously about this than we...
Oh, yeah. I mean, 5 years from now, if we're having a conversation about who to replace Aerosmith mm-hmm. with, that will have gone on too long. Right?
Yeah. But they're very hopeful because of the flexibility of the Racing Academy show. And we've talked previously about there's going to be a Halloween iteration of this. There's going to be a Christmas iteration of that. Right now, they're frantically clicking away and hoping that people are getting enough entertainment value out of this 12-minute long show.
I don't think there are enough people getting enough entertainment out of it. The wait times are already basically walk-in all the time now.
Okay.
It was busy the first day that it opened, mm-hmm. but the fact that it is in such a far, far corner mm-hmm. of the park where you've got to walk through at least one other attraction to get to it mm-hmm. is not going to draw the people in, I think.
Okay, well... Once upon a time, there was a conversation about, you know, when they were redoing Disney's Hollywood Studios about, you know, bringing the car, you know, the Cars Land that had been built for California out here.
That's what I was thinking. If they could somehow make a walkway that goes from like behind Star Wars Launch Bay mm-hmm. that gets over to this place, that might bring in more people. By the way, I don't know if we talked about this, but I was in the studios last week mm-hmm. and I noticed new entrance signage. Mm-hmm. for the Disney Junior show and the Vampirina character greeting. Remember way back in the day, you and I talked about one of the initial problems with over in the Magic Kingdom with the timekeeper mm-hmm. was that there was no out front signage that told people that there was an attraction in there.
Yeah, yeah.
The same kind of thing happens at Disney Junior in Animation Courtyard mm-hmm. because the signage, the entrance, is perpendicular to the way that you're walking. So what Disney's actually done with this now is actually put a sign out at a 45-degree angle, like a big entrance sign, mm-hmm. like you see at the start of like marathons, you know, with like banners and everything around it.
Mm-hmm.
They put these entrance facades at 45-degree angles to the corners. So it's obvious this is where you walk in to get into this attraction that's in this huge building to your right. And I forgot to mention on the last show when I was when we recorded it, but Disney at least recognizes the issue mm-hmm. that if we can demonstrate to people that there's something here worth seeing, and you can see the entrance from outside the animation courtyard, we'll get more people in it.
Yeah, and watch that space, Len. You know, the gate there that has sort of the relief of all of the actors and performers and that sort of thing from...
Yeah, the archway, yeah.
Yeah.
You think the archway is not long for this world?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, where Club 33 is situated there, you know, that's not going anywhere.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jim.
There
go
we
ahead.
Go.
I'm contractually obligated to say I don't know what you're talking
there
about.
There we go. Go ahead. Okay. And the complex that makes up Disney Junior and the Brown Derby, good solid piece. Directly behind Star Wars Launch Bay is the four-story building that used to hold all of the animators that worked at Disney Studios of Florida.
Yeah. So Brian McNichols from my team and I were talking about this the other day.
Yep.
we're trying to figure out where the expansion for Disney's Hollywood Studios might go. And you're right. So behind all of this, it, basically trailers and employee infrastructure.
So the only two things that really need to stay there are, again, the Brown Derby Disney Junior Complex and the four-story building filled with executives and their parking structure, which you can see that from inside of Toy Story Land. Everything else is up for grabs. And again, it's now the notion of, especially on the heels of Galaxy's Edge, it's like, okay, so what are we doing over here? And you and I have talked about the Monsters, Inc. themed land that they've taken a look at. In fact, that's basically tabled now till they see how the Monsters, Inc. television series does on Disney Plus. In fact, by the way, again, April 15th, they just announced today, Len, everybody can watch the simulcast. They're calling it Investors Day, and everybody can tune
Disney Plus?
For Disney Plus. Everybody can tune in to watch this, and they're going to walk out some pretty amazing stuff. So it starts, I want to say, 5 o'clock East Coast time, 2 o'clock West Coast time. Make it 8, folks. You're going to want to watch this.
That's super interesting. But you're right, Jim, to your point. If Disney decided to move the infrastructure that's behind Star Wars Launch Bay, so to the northwest of that, there is a ton of room there that they could move one of two places, either west of World Drive, or if they want to keep it on the same side of World Drive, just north of Cypress Lane. There's a huge patch of unclaimed land right there between Cypress Drive and East Buena Vista Drive. Right now, they're not using for anything at all, and they can move a lot of infrastructure over that way.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's definitely enough room for another land. In fact, they could, if they wanted to, they could extend all of Toy Story Land. They basically triple or quadruple the size of Toy Story Land if they wanted to. Easily double it without moving too much infrastructure at all.
A lot of those decisions kind of depend on how Toy Story 4 does this summer, which should, just on the face of how the first three films did, should be a smash hit. But again, you don't know.
I'm calling it right now, Jim. The next, based on the Captain Marvel thing, that the next land that the studios gets is a Marvel-related land.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. All right, Jim, let's take a quick commercial break. Folks, coming up after our break, Jim digs deeper into the questions Universal asked on its latest survey about the kinds of rides you want to see at a possible new theme park. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Jim, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about a new survey Universal put out asking people about the mix of attractions that they wanted to see in a potentially new theme park. And their questions were interestingly balanced around whether you wanted heavily detailed rides or heavily detailed environments or some combination of both. We got an interesting letter from listener Stephen P. about this, who said this. As I listened to the questions about the rides versus the immersive land balance, I was more and more struck by the question's absurdity. The answer to almost all these questions is, of course, it depends. Here's a couple of examples, and Stephen gives them. One of them is, he says, is his favorite ride on Disney World property. It's the Tower of Terror. It's not in a heavily themed land, but the line, lobby, pre-show, even the steam tunnels are incredibly immersive. One of the finest theme cues Stephen said he's ever experienced. And all of this elevates what is essentially a standard drop ride. So in this case, Stephen says, immersion makes the experience. And then you contrast this with the Hulk, where the line is not immersive at all. In fact, Marvel Thieving Island doesn't do anyone proud, he says, but Hulk is a great roller coaster. So nobody really cares about the lack of theming. Same thing with Diagon Alley, which is super, super themed, even though Gringotts itself is not a particularly good ride. So what Stephen is saying is, the experience has to be great no matter what, but the greatness can be achieved through many different combinations. Jim, is this sort of the kind of thing that that Universal is trying to get at with its questions?
Surveys are always written with a goal in mind. They sort of tilt the survey toward the conclusion they want you to make, you know, with the hope of, well, look, you know, the research supports this. So, you know, everybody needs a unicorn, you know, horn inserted in their forehead. It's like, oh, well, okay. You know, we've got the research now. But with this one, when they would give away things like the augmented reality.
Right. Yeah.
Every theme park has a moving vehicle ride that takes you past physical scenery. But the interesting thing is that as you dug deep and broke things into individual categories, you came across things like that, where they talked about an interactive attraction with augmented reality. You get the sense that they're trying to push the envelope, but in a safe way. They don't want to roll the dice so heavily and end up with a park that is tied to an IP that has fallen out of favor. You talk with people who are fans of hit shows or that sort of thing, and they will talk about, oh, wouldn't it be great if there were a Game of Thrones park or a Lord of the Rings land? And, you know, but then when you talk with people in themed entertainment, they come back down to, that's a wonderful thing to say. How do you do that?
Yeah. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, sure, you could build Frodo or Bilbo's house, but it's like, all right, so we walk through it and then what?
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to replicate the fight scenes unless you're going to do screens, right? Yep. Yeah. You're never going to capture the immense scale of the landscapes, right? It's like trying to do a ride based on Titanic. Okay, the boat sinks. Mm-hmm. What's step two is what? Yeah, like then what, right? Like,
it's so funny you say that because Fox had a theme park on the Gold Coast in Australia where for a time they did have a Titanic basically walkthrough attraction. And the final moment of the ride was when, based on, you know, where you were standing, you know, they then said, oh, by the way, well, this half of the room survived and this half of the room went down, you know, and you're standing there watching the room flood.
That's a downer, Jim.
No, that's exactly right now.
You're not going to sell a lot of merchandise that says I didn't survive.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
it's just not.
Also, the other thing that I found fascinating was to go through what they were considering for intellectual properties. I mean, for example, the different categories were world-renowned IP based on a movie, TV show, comic, or video game. This survey did not include the option for a world-renowned IP based on a book, which I thought Universal is the park that pushes Jurassic Park. And it's like, I'm pretty sure that was a book first.
Yeah, but can you think of a book that hasn't been made into a really well-selling book? It hasn't been made into a movie.
No, that's it exactly.
Right.
But the interesting thing is that if you actually talk with the folks in Universal Creative, they will talk about how when they're working on the Wizarding World, they actually try to make the land straddle both the films and the books so that, you know, there are details hidden in shops and you know, restaurants and that sort of thing that someone who's read the books rather than watch the movies will get. But yeah, they go from world-renowned IP to well-known IP to niche or lesser-known IP.
Give me an example of something that's a well-known IP that isn't world-renowned.
That's probably something like Stranger Things.
Okay. It's not world-renowned. Okay, that's a great example, actually.
But on the other hand, you know, you have to anticipate that, you know, as Stranger Things goes on and gets sold around the world and that sort of thing, it gets that much more well-known. Likewise, for example, something like The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. One of the reasons why, when you're on the ride, you go to the moon is because when you're outside of the building, there's the logo for The Tonight Show, and it features Jimmy Fallon standing in front of the moon, you know, because, again, it's a late-night show. And they actually deliberately sought out guests in the park, international visitors who weren't familiar with Jimmy Fallon or The Tonight Show, and asked them based on this art and what would you anticipate is inside that building? And it's like, well, a ride where I get to go to the moon. And, you know, to give Jason Sorrell and the team who put together the Tonight Show ride credit, they thought that was funny, and they were flexible enough to, well, okay, so let's send him to the moon. And to give Fallon credit, when they came to him with the idea, he actually thought it was funny. And it's like, sure, let's go to the moon.
Sure, I'm done with this.
But the fact that right from the get-go here, these categories, a movie, a TV show, a comic, and a video game.
And a video game, right.
With all the Nintendo stuff that Universal is working on right now, the fact that they felt the need to have to, you know, before we actually start pouring the concrete and pulling up the steel, you really do like video games, right? You really like them.
Because you're cool with the video games, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, we don't want to be a billion in and have you guys go, you know, I don't like Mario anymore.
No, I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. The demographic for Nintendo is perfect for theme park goers right now because, you know, kids grew up playing Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. Everyone's familiar with the Nintendo games. Everyone has some copy of some game somewhere, even if we're just passing familiarity with it. I think it totally makes sense there. I'm intrigued though about a Stranger Things attraction. Like when you said Stranger Things, the my mind immediately went to character breakfast where all they serve is Eggo waffles. Right? Like everything is based around Eggo waffles. Mm. I think that's
Universal is that rare park where something can start as just a maze or a house at Halloween Horror Night and then become an attraction. I mean, think about at Universal Studios Hollywood, they actually have a Walking Dead walkthrough, which does a brilliant job of marrying, you know, live performers to film clips to physical environments.
Yeah, I can't do those kinds of things.
No.
It makes me too jumpy.
No, again.
It's not for everyone.
And my daughter especially loves the fact, you know, loves torturing me because I just don't do zombies.
Oh, you don't like zombies? Have you seen on Netflix the Santa Clarita Diet?
Oh, with Drew Barrymore?
Hysterical.
Yeah.
Jim. It's the, I believe it's the same guy that did Better Off Ted.
Oh.
The show. And it's got to be the same showrunner because I think virtually the entire cast has shown up in Santa Clarita Diet at one time or another.
Wow.
Like Portia de Rossi has done a cameo in it. It's hysterical. It's very, very funny. The first couple episodes, you can see like everybody kind of getting their footings on it, but the dialogue is very, very funny.
I don't know if you saw, they've just started running a trailer for a Jim Jarmusch movie starring Bill Murray about zombies, only this take on zombies, what you did in real life, you as a zombie, you eventually devolve back to. And at one point they show Carol Kane sort of lurching towards somebody. And again, Carol Kane is, you know her from The Princess Bride, you know, Valerie, the wife of Miracle Max. But right. She's lurching to the camera and all she can say is, Chardonnay, Chardonnay.
So Bill Murray's got a zombie movie coming out.
Yes, well, he's the head of police. And it's just one of these things where, again, remember, this is Bill Murray who did Zombieland.
I was going to say, the cameo in Zombieland was fantastic.
Yeah, well, that this time he's in law enforcement dealing with the zombies. So, no, definitely a trailer worth seeking out, folks.
All right, Jim. So we've gone through the Universal survey for intellectual property. What about like the kind of ride or show? Like what you actually do on it?
The way they break it down is that, you know, are we doing a standalone attraction? Is the standalone attraction located in a moderately themed land? Is it located in a highly immersive themed land? And then, you know, for me, what's fascinating is when they break it down into its component parts. You're in a queue space. All right, does this queue space, for example, feature an interactive game or kiosk? Does it include a video pre-show that you have to watch before you board? Or does it include a pre-show that features live actors? And it just, it was like they broke every theme park attraction in the world down to Legos.
Yeah, it's a good analogy, yeah.
What piece do you want here?
Yeah, there were like nine different questions about the kind of line you were going to stand in.
But they talk about, are you in a standard queue where you just stand there in a typical line and, you know, there's no queue entertainment? Or are you in a virtual queue where you've reserved the time and now, mind you, when you come back, you may have to wait up to 15 minutes before actually boarding the vehicle.
But like Fallon is a virtual queue.
No, that's it exactly. But even, you know, the whole notion of breaking down, you know, what sort of queue are you in? Is it a light overlay of theming a decor? Is it moderate? Or is it immersive? Much like what Stephen was just saying about Gringotts Bank, an amazing space that, you know, ends in an okay ride. And then let's not forget, you know, you exit through the gift shop.
Oh, were there questions about the gift shop?
That part they kept out. You
know? It's implied.
There you go.
You don't have to ask questions to which you everyone knows the answer.
After going through the survey, I don't think I can ever go on a ride anymore and go, oh boy, I'm going on this attraction. Now I have to break it down into whatever category.
Light overlay of theming in the queue, yeah. Right? Interactive games. Yeah.
Am I riding? Is this a moving vehicle ride that follows a flat path? Is this a moving vehicle ride with elevation changes? Is a moving vehicle?
Oh yeah, you can just check off the box.
Yeah.
The boxes as you went through every single ride.
I almost felt bad sharing this info with you because I thought, boy, this is going to make the guide really interesting to write going forward.
Just a whole other set of categorizations that we can employ. Yeah. It's a great way, though, to rate a ride. So like if you a ride that has like top-notch mm-hmm. elements in each of those categories, mm-hmm. you would definitely consider different than one that didn't.
Yeah, but when you think about something like Peter Pan that's been around, Peter Pan Flight since 1955. And yes, every couple of years you see Disney step back in, and just recently they've upgraded Peter Pan with use of the projection mapping and that sort of thing. But it's still basically the same ride experience from 1955. And
oh yeah,
how do you become an evergreen? How do you settle on that mix of elements that makes it
Yeah, that's a good point, because I mean the original Peter Pan ride, the queue is nothing, right? I mean, they've got the thing where you go through.
Absolutely.
Now, right? So now it's I would say moderate theming. Mm-hmm. The queue space includes interactive games, but it didn't always. The scenery inside the ride, it's all physical mm-hmm. sets. I mean, none of it is modern, right? It's all old style sets. Yeah. The audio isn't especially mm-hmm. good. The ride vehicles are moderately innovative, right? Because they're suspended from the top rather than from the bottom. Yeah, but it doesn't really have anything on this survey that you would say would be indicative of a top-notch attraction, and yet every single person that goes to the Magic Kingdom gets on Peter Pan. It's not their first ride, but they're going to do it throughout the day.
It's definitely one of those ones that you have to go on, and
it has that certain mm-hmm. something, right? That's that you can't quantify in a survey. Mm-hmm. It's a great point.
And we're about 5 years into the scene one that was added for Walt Disney World's Haunted Mansion. And, there are so few people now who actually do anything in there. I mean, they're just sort of like, look, nothing personal. I just want to get on the ride. I want to get on this wonderful ride. Yeah,
it's hot. I'm tired. Yeah, my feet hurt.
I don't want to play with the books.
I do notice this because I've actually done the standby line where all of these interactive elements are purposely just to see how many people are interacting with it. And the one thing I've noticed that is if you start playing with stuff, everyone will start playing with stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not sure that everyone understands that it's interactive.
You've hit upon one of the other issues that when you have as many international visitors as you do.
That's exactly it.
There's nothing there that says, pull the books out. Something will happen.
And the interesting thing about it is this is one of the places where you've got a kid who can't stand still. Yep. And when they start pulling and pushing on things, then everyone sees what's going on. Yeah, I think that's what gives everybody the hint. Mm-hmm. That you can do things in the queue. It makes it better.
So what they need to do is hire a street masseuse performer whose job is just to hang in there all day and be obnoxious. Hey, what happens when I push on this?
Exactly. Get some precocious child actors to just run around and grab things
there
in the queue.
Go.
I think that's a fantastic idea, Jim. What could possibly go wrong with this?
Put that right in there with the Disney Villain Cruise theme idea, folks. All right. And again, send that check to Len Testa.
All right, folks. That's gonna do it for our show today. On next week's show, we're going to talk about a new patent Disney's filed for an interactive space based on predicted events. Maybe related to either a ride or a transportation network. Not entirely sure. Also, for more of our shows, head on over to disneydish.bandcamp.com. We're produced fabulously by Aaron Adams, who earns extra money this time of year by taste testing new flavors of marshmallow peeps for Easter candy sales. Don't forget to go onto iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We'll see you on the next show.